listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Kalula and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Nikki Kalula. We're going to jump right into this episode, and we have a very special guest, one of my former students, one of my favorite new songwriters, Mrs. Christina Morse, I should say.
Yeah.
How are you?
I'm doing well.
I remember introducing you as Miss Christina Johnson, so I was like, oh wait, she's married now.
Yeah, it's so wild. It's of all the things I thought would happen in LA, I didn't think I was going to meet somebody I was going to marry. I was like, it's going to be me and cats for a long time.
Well, it's also pretty cool that you married a musician and engineer and also an artist himself. And he's such a great guy. So you chose well. You did good. You did good.
Well, I think so, too. He's amazing. And we met through songwriting. So
Tell me a little about that. I didn't know this part of the story. Yeah, let's jump right into this.
So I was a part of this songwriting collective, and I was helping out and with, you know, doing like media for them and photography, and then later teaching some lyric writing classes. And Evan, my husband, had reached out just about like some of the content of the upcoming workshop, and just kind of like said like, oh, you know, what's going on here? What are your thoughts on it? So I just kind of gave him an overview and was like, all right, well, see if I see you. And so we briefly met at one of the events that was like a workshop kind of ordeal. Kind of like there's like a lyrics workshop and a, you know, couple other like music business one and some other things related. And so we saw each other, and then he started following me after that. And then came to one of my shows, and we hung out with some of our mutual friends from that. And then we got to talking, and the rest is history.
That's amazing. That's amazing. Well, you know, it's always a cool thing when it's like you move to a new city and then you find love. You know, it's like I have a couple friends that either moved to New York or they moved out here. Some has moved as far as Australia. It's crazy. So I think it's such a cool part of your story. But let's go back to the very beginning.
Yes.
You grew up in, I think, Grand Rapids, Michigan, but I think a city just outside of Grand Rapids, right?
Yeah. So Lansing is the capital. So it's kind of between Detroit and Grand Rapids, in the middle with the capital and a really cool guitar store and university, but like not a lot of people visit there. So
it's like a passing through town.
Yeah, a little bit. It's like capital cities where like they're, I guess a lot of them when they were choosing them, they're situated away from anything too exciting. So that way they're not a target.
You need to keep everybody out of trouble, maybe.
Yeah, keep really everybody out of trouble.
Let's not have too many attractions here. We don't want people to stay. We just want people to grab a bite, maybe look around, buy some things and keep moving along.
Yeah.
I've driven through many cities. I think I've driven through a couple in Michigan. But I have not been there, and you'll have to show me around. You and Evan will have to give me the tour, even though Evan is probably a newbie to that town as well.
You know, what's so funny, like one of the wild things about like meeting Evan out here, I moved to California. I didn't know anybody really. I knew like one or two people who had, you know, some of my mom's friends from like decades ago that I basically said hi to. But Evan has a cousin that I was on a robotics team in high school with.
What?
In Michigan. That's who went to the same school and did not know it. She has a different last name and everything. And so I never would have put two and two together. And I met Evan. We were dating for like 6 months on the way to the airport with my mom. And she's like, oh, Evan, you said you had relatives in Michigan, you know, what do they do? And lo and behold, it was not only his cousin that was on my robotics team with me and went to my school, but also his mom worked with my mom for like 20 years.
Are you kidding me?
Or not his mom, his cousin's mom. So his aunt. Wow. Yeah. That so
wild.
It's like 6 degrees of separation that all comes full circle.
That's the universe just stirring the pot. Like, all right, we'll connect them later. We'll make her move to California and do the hard work there.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
It's wild. So he knows a little bit about Michigan from visiting his cousins and stuff there growing up. And
you probably walked right by each other as kids and didn't even know it.
I mean, seriously, I was going through my head. I'm like, were you at her graduation party? Did you, you got the same senior photo I did, right?
That's amazing. That's amazing.
It's so, funny.
Tell me how you got into music. Like, what was the moment where you kind of like, knew you wanted to, you know, sing and write and play? Like, what was the moment where you were you around music in your family? Was it kind of like a school thing? Was there a teacher that kind of got you into it? Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. Well, I think since I was really little, I loved singing and I loved music and I was just pretty obsessed. And I remember walking up to people, like relatives at Easter when I was about 3 years old. And talking to them and being like, and they'd say like, what do you want to be when you grow up? And you know, they're talking to a kid and I'm like, I want to be a singer. And they're like, no, but like a real job. And so,
bastards.
Yeah. So then in my head, I was like, oh wait, so that's not a real job. So I'll figure out something else. But I always loved music. I just wanted to sing nonstop and sing all the time and did choir and did musicals and everything through school and then did orchestra later.
What musicals did you do? Do you remember?
I did, let's see. I did like the kid ones that are educational and help you learn state names and stuff like that.
Oh, that's
and
cool.
Then later on that it was like Honk the Musical. If you, it's like a retelling of The Ugly Duckling through Broadway.
Oh, I've never heard of that story. I'll have to look that up.
It's kind of fun. It's kind of cute. And then I did Seussical in high school. Kiss Me, Kate.
Yeah, that's
cool. I'm trying to think of the other ones.
Everybody always does Grease or some kind of part of that, you know? So I figured that'd be one of them maybe. No?
No, I didn't. I feel like some of our directors were into more obscure things. Like I remember being in a George Bernard Shaw play and stuff like that.
You had some artsy fartsy teachers. That's amazing.
Yeah, it was wild. It was like, yeah, and it was not like the regular mainline ones. It was like very, they're like, you know, in the off season when we're not doing musicals, we're going to get really deep and do like Death of a Salesman and George Bernard Shaw and
so, like, that's amazing.
Yeah, so it was fun. So I did lots of that. I did. My mom had a 70s band. What starting when I was in middle school.
Your mom is so cool. I remember she came to the show. What the first time you came to the studio? I remember meeting her. And I was like, your mom is cool. She's just cool.
Oh, thank you.
Tell her I said hello, please.
Oh, I will. Yeah, she's great. And she's also one of the people who's been a big influence on me with music because she's obviously keyboard and flute as well. So she did that
in her band. Like, was it like folk music, funk music? Like what kind of music was it?
It's very like CCR, Beatles. I'm trying to think of some, Bob Seger, that's Eagles, awesome. Yep. All that kind of stuff. And then she was in a Fleetwood Mac cover band for a while. I wasn't a part of that one, but it was really cool. But so I grew up kind of playing a lot of the 70s kind of classic rock sort of stuff and in her band and then in other stuff. And I was really involved with church and did like gospel music. And so that's where it's like her band and then church were like 3-part harmonies all the time.
That is awesome. And that's, I do that on my own records because I just love 3-part harmonies all the time. I just love that sound. It will never get old. It just always sounds good, you know?
Yeah. I think there's something about the human voice that you just can't, you can't simulate it. It just, like you can, but it doesn't have the same feeling. And I think having harmony, just like there's so much warmth that comes from that that you can never create it with anything else.
I think it's also cool, and I'm sure you go through this too. It's like, that's kind of the only time you can really harmonize with yourself is when you make a record. So it's mm-hmm. like, I always look forward to that part of making records because, you know, just you just can't do it live. Like in the same way you can, but it's never exactly like having duplicates of yourself and being able to layer vocals on top of itself, you know, where you know, live, you can have all the computer gizmos or little pedals. And I have a couple, but they just don't translate in the same way that gives me the same kind of level. So when you're in the studio and you're writing, do you think of kind of like tapping into those early harmonies? Are you kind of like trying to reinvent something that you're listening to now? Like, how do you draw on some of that experience?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I feel like it's kind of evolved over time. I think there's the three-part harmony is like my go-to, I think, and where it just like, it feels really cozy. It feels really nice and warm and friendly. Yep. And then I think some of the other influences, I think the more I've done songwriting, the more I've tried to be really critical about the overall feel that's coming out of it. Like I went to art school too. And so I got a degree in visual art. And so I think with that, there's so much talk about, or at least in my school there was, it's like really about concept first. Mm-hmm. So like letting the concept lead the media. And so I think it's really influenced the way that I do music, where I have things that I love to do because I think that they're fun, but I am always trying to edit down to what like is really getting to the core of the message of the song.
And that's so interesting. So you don't think sometimes that fun stuff can just be on that same level? It's like you think it's like, oh, that's playtime versus let me make something good for the song. I like that. I want to kind of dig into that a little bit because I think that's a cool kind of concept. It's debatable because you can indulge sometimes and it surpasses what you think, but I totally know that feeling too, where it's like, this is too much for this song. I don't think it needs it. So how do you find that kind of balance, I guess, is the best way to keep it fun and also keep it like to the core of the song?
Yeah, that's it's like it's really hard to kind of find that balance, I think, because there, I think one other thing that I took away from art school is it's really about like limiting your palette expands your possibilities. So I think there are certain things that are going to be within your palette that stay true to you as an artist without going too crazy for, you know, for the song, unless that's part of your approach. However, I think there's certain things where like there's, and I think it works more in certain genres than others, because certain genres, you start taking away things that are like ornamental or are, you know, for feel or for fun, that, and then it just doesn't feel like what you love about that style anymore. And so I think you have to incorporate some of that, but like to that point, there's like a big difference between having fun, but also kind of like phoning it in a little bit versus when you are making sure every note is exactly what's like adding to a bigger picture.
That's interesting. I like that. I constantly dance on that line a lot, like where I can definitely indulge and just put harmonies or parts or just like throw everything in the kitchen sink at it. And there's sometimes where I'll leave everything in there. I'm like, let the listener listen to it and grab certain things in one listen. But I also like overwhelming the listener where it's like, you're not going to catch everything all at once, because my favorite tracks are like that. Like I'll listen to a Pink Floyd song and I'm like, oh my God, that's not what they're doing. It's this, this, and this. And I'm only like, my mind is only catching this one part, or, you know, a Michael Jackson tune will do that. So I love that. I love discussing stuff like that too. I can get nerdy with all that stuff. So so when did you just start playing like guitar and kind of like start dabbling with keys and whatnot? Like, where did you start?
Yeah. So I would say my grandmother and my mom have been pianists, and my dad also did piano growing up, but he did more of the like both of my parents did the piano competitions and the, wow, you know, that like the very hardcore kind of tracked learning on it, classical sort of stuff. And then later on, my mom did jazz band, and that kind of led her to do more of the band thing and getting into charts and all that. And like my grandmother was, she was very serious about piano from a young age, and was, grew up in Detroit during like a lot of the prime of the art scene in Detroit. Wow. In like the 30s and the 40s and the 50s. And so would go, had a really incredible teacher that influenced her a lot, that would play for all the symphonies and would play for like Judy Garland and stuff when she'd come through town, and a lot of those kind of people. And it was so incredible. And so she was always really passionate about it. And then later in life, she got into ragtime and had like a whole club of friends with, you know, ragtime kind of stuff. And so when I was really little, my grandmother started teaching me, and there were always pianos around everywhere because everybody played piano. And so she, like, I think I started piano at like 4, but I only took it for about like a year or two from her, just kind of getting some fundamentals. And then I switched to violin at 5.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's awesome. Oh, yeah.
So funny thing, like I started with violin when I was 5, like did it all the way through high school.
Wow.
And then took a huge break because I was burned out on it. And I think too, it's like classical world is so different from like songwriter world.
Yeah.
And I did classical voice and opera and stuff through college. And I started picking up guitar around like middle school a little bit, doing some folksy stuff. And I started picking up fiddling as well, because I was
to
compete with Irish dance. And so that influenced so much stuff. With
like, all these levels I'm learning. I'm like, what? You're like, and that's when I started playing the xylophone. And
but needless to say, I had a very musical family. And so I think there was a lot around, and there was a lot of appreciation for the arts and a lot of like culture and traditional culture. And like my grandmother was Italian, so she was very big into opera always. And
that's awesome,
you know, so
that's what I studied in school. I was like way I was so hardcore into it all through like middle school and even high school. And college was like almost overkill. It was like, okay, this is too much, like I don't think I could deal with it. So I love the music. I don't always love the people you work with. That's the part of the problem. Classical music. It's like, I loved all the orchestra members, but I didn't love all the stage antics. And just, there's a little bit of a snobbish behavior, I think, when it comes to music. And it's not where I'm at when it comes to music at all. It's like the farthest away I think about music. So it kind of like, you know, I could see like, especially your mom being Italian, that is part of the culture in such a huge way. It is in their blood to listen to opera and be all about it. And I've gone to Italy and experienced that. And it is like a sport. It's like soccer. And I love that. So I respect that so much. That's amazing. Well, I'll have to talk to your mom sometime about opera, because I can go nerdy on that too. But so you kind of like spun out of classical music a little bit. Mm-hmm. And
yeah.
What made you kind of like start wanting to write songs?
I would say, I think when this is kind of like what helped me transition out of classical music. And I think what started drawing me to other things like folk music and, you know, band music is, I think when I was starting when I was like a little bit younger, like I'd say I started writing songs around middle school. Were they good? Who knows, because they are stuck in the vault, you know, where they will stay.
That's awesome.
You know, but like, I think there is this idea of expression. And I think with one of the reasons I picked up guitar after violin is that I couldn't, like, it's really hard to sing when you're playing violin, and it's limiting. And I think too, it's like demanding of your attention.
Right.
And I think in the way that I think when you have a story that you want to tell, you really have to do, you know, like voice and something that then is accompaniment. So I started getting
as cool too when you're like this and you're singing versus this and you're singing. It's like like your focus is different, your kind of like body language is different. So you made a good choice. But I'm sure violin helped your guitar playing. Tell me, like, did it come naturally to you in that way because you had kind of like, you know, technique with violin? Did that help? Had to, right?
Yeah. I think the biggest thing that I took away from violin is that it develops a really good ear. And so like for intonation and for like musical ideas, like from classical music, and you'll understand this where you know, classical, you get a lot of different, it's not necessarily like different styles, but like the instrumental and like note palette that you start and rhythmic palette that you are exposed to is super wide. And it's more than I think what'll be on top 40 at any given moment in time. And so I think like you start with that big wide palette and you start with some of these ideas that are in rhythmic kind of things and ways to put things together, as well as stuff like intonation and rhythm and all that, that I think really has helped. I'd say certain things like guitar is a very different instrument to play from violin. And some ways it's easier, some ways it's harder. Right. And so it was like easier in the sense that I think you're not like you can, it, like it's more cyclical, where I think violin, you're playing like mostly lead lines, or you're doing.
Well, it's also there's no frets on a violin, so I think that's harder. The tuning, I think, is really hard on a violin to make it sound great, because the tuning pegs are just, I mean, I don't even think they call them tuning pegs, but if they do, but they're just like super old school, versus the technology has changed and gotten better for guitars, where it's not really, it's been the opposite. It's like the instruments, the best violins are like 300 years old or 200 years old, you know? So it's so crazy. I like that that gave you some kind of like head start with guitar, because it definitely, without you noticing, affects your approach to it. You know, it's like, that's what's cool. It's like, you may think of it in like as a string ensemble without you even knowing that you're thinking about it as a string ensemble. You know what I mean? That kind of
thing. Totally.
Well, let's play some music. What are we going to play first?
So first we're going to play Bold.
All right. I like it. Kick the door down. Let's get bold. Yeah. Here's Christina Moore.
Admirations now that you're gold. Do you still have aspirations now that you're old? Do you still eat rations now that you're sold? If I could be so bold, if I could be so
out for my
Yeah, that was awesome. I love the key change at the end. Very cool.
Thank you. What made
you decide to do that key change? And then I want to talk to some about the melody and the kind of song structure a little bit.
Yeah. Wow. It's so funny because the key change, I think it was like, literally, it was like, we need a Whitney Houston moment. We need to just like make it big. And it was very 80s influenced in a lot of ways, and like influenced by a lot of people were influenced by the 80s. And I think it just felt like, yeah, let's have a pop diva moment.
I love that. No, it was so great. And it was unexpected too. It's like you kind of like built it up and then everything kind of like hushed for a second and then you launch right into it. It's like, yeah, you set that up perfect. So it was job well done. Let's talk a little bit about like the production of the song. Kind of tell me your approach and kind of direction. What made you go in certain ways?
Yeah. Let's see. I think going into it, before this, I had done like a lot of self-recording and a lot of acoustic, and I'd played like a billion shows of open mics and festivals, just me and acoustic. And I really wanted to make a departure from that because a lot of the music that I was listening to was stuff like The Killers or Churches or M83 and things that were like, I think that they felt immersive in a totally different way. And it was so inspiring. And I found, I met another guy who's a producer back in Michigan. He doesn't live there anymore, but his name is Joseph Schmidt. And it was like one of those chance happening sort of things where he was touring with a band. And then he got in a car accident and had to like stay home to recover for a while. And it happened to be a time when I was in between jobs, and we got connected through mutual friends and realized like, oh, this could be really cool to work on something like this. And he was primarily a keyboardist and a drummer. And so, and he was big into hardware synths and some stuff. And I'm like, hardcore for hardware, you know, there's some good soft synths out there, but like, I think it's, again, maybe this comes from the whole violin background, but like, there's so much with tone and warmth and like the woodsiness that I think you get from analog synths.
Yep.
And so I really wanted to incorporate that and have something that felt very like grand and epic, and incorporated a lot of those influences. And then throughout some of the rest of the album, or EP, bringing a little bit of like the theatricality that was in like one of my other favorite artists, which is Florence and the Machine.
Oh yeah, she's great. I think I'm gonna be honest with you. I've seen Florence. I've heard her music. I think you're better than Florence. I think you're a lot better than Florence. Yeah, absolutely.
Oh my gosh, wow.
I think when the dog days are over is like a great song that she's done and her band's done. That's a hard song to just kind of like get to that level that she did. But, I think the song that you just showed me, I've heard a lot of her stuff. I like your song way better. I mean, the song structure, the arrangement, the production. First of all, I want to talk a little bit about the production. Okay. So what's so cool is the chord progression you have. Mm-hmm. It, like in today's production, that's not a real typical thing that you would do with that production, and that's what made me love it. I was like, oh, this is like an old school songwriting progression with new age technology and sounds and synths, and it's got like this complete throwback and kind of like familiar thing that's happening now. So I love it because it's like both familiar and there's a little bit of the unknown with some of the production, and I just thought it was fantastic. It was great. I love the guitar lines. I like the way it's panning. It's like it's being playful in the right ways. And then your melody is just solid. Let's talk a little bit about the lyrics of the song. Something like what inspired it and what kind of made you write in that direction.
Wow. And thank you so much for all of the kind words. That's like, that means so
much. You're a badass. You need to know that you're a badass. So when you get out there, you know that you're a badass. Absolutely.
Oh, thank you. Well, I think from like a lyrics perspective, it's very much, I wrote it on acoustic before there was any kind of production for it, and then adapted it. I think I wanted something that felt a little bit like powerful, but unsettled a little bit, because the concept of the whole song is about asking for help. And so it's like, and I think too, especially asking for wisdom from people who are older, And so the lyrics are reflecting that, like, do you have aspirations now that you're gold, like, or that you've like really made it or had success? And like, do you still want things? Like, do you still have goals? Are things, you know, like, do you still live in the same limitations, even though you've really surpassed that?
Right.
And so, like, as far as like, are like, do people break out of where they are mentally when they're struggling, or do you, like, as you grow, as your whole life and like your view on in openness, like, has that expanded as well? So it's like a bunch of questions.
Very cool.
And then
I think, I don't know if I told you this in class, like you can always tell, I can always tell when you just see like a four-dimensional songwriter, you know? And I mean that like, because like you can hear it in your songs, you can hear it in how you play and your delivery and your melodies. I even remember like your concert poster, which was one of our assignments back in the day. And you just thought about all the angles. There was always like depths to everything you did, and you continue to do that. And I love it, because I think those are the artists I end up like following or wanting to listen to. And I mean, I'll go decades with those artists, because I think music can reach people for a finite amount of time, or it becomes completely timeless, where it's like you will always tap into that song because it saved you or it meant something to you at that time. And you're kind of writing from that perspective. You're writing about really delicate things to talk about and doing it in a really accessible way. And I think that combination will definitely take you far. So I love it. I think the approach, the concept, everything, don't ever stop thinking about songs like that, because there is an audience for that. Absolutely. So it's, you're doing this like pop element thing, which I love, but you have this singer songwriter thing, which is also like, here, there's levels to this song. It's not just take it as it comes. You know what I mean? Cause so much music now, it just doesn't move me, because it's like, here it is and that's it. And it's like, okay, I think it sounds cool, but what did you say? What do you mean? Like, what does this symbolize, or how will I resonate with it? And I think you think about all those things when you write. So I think it's tremendous. Wow. Job well done. Let's play another. What are we playing next?
So next, how about we go for In the Air?
In the Air. Here's Christina Morse with In the Air.
In the air, I can feel the ice blowing in the air. Oh, it's in the air, I know it's so far. was too long to stare. Oh, it's in the air.
That was awesome. My goodness.
That was so Thank awesome. You.
That, you know, I don't know if you listen to Ben Rector. He's one of my favorite.
Oh, movies. Yeah.
I love him. And that vibe has, there's a lot of like that vibe in your song. And I love him. I think he's one of my favorite new songwriters. I'm dying to see him live. And that song, that progression is awesome. Tell me a little bit about that approach with what you did with production and sound and vibe.
Yeah. Wow. Thank you so much again. I would say this one, I so wanted it to feel like really big and epic again, but have more of the natural elements. And I think this, like, again, Florence has been a huge influence. I think some of it is, I think there's like with, like you touched on it right before you played the song, but how a lot of songs are kind of like one dimensional in pop. Right. And I think a lot of the artists that I gravitated to were kind of like alt pop a little bit, I think, because in so much of my songwriting has been shaped by things because like I couldn't identify with the one dimensional songs, or if it's about like somebody that feels like a throwaway character, it's like, why do I care about this person in the song? If it's someone you're just like, oh, they're terrible, so I'm going to throw them away. Here's a song, you know? So it's like, I don't care enough about what's going on, or I can't identify. And so I think so much of my songwriting has been shaped by artists who are really talking, you know, conceptually or a little bit like cryptically, ethereally, you know, something where it feels like very, like there's a sense of escapism where you're really like invested in what they're talking about. And so I think this is a lot of that very like Florence and the Machine, Kate Bush, Coldplay, like big epicness with the feeling of, you know, that again, it's like relating back to the concept of this is about kind of like something bad getting in the zeitgeist and how eventually it'll dissipate. But when it's there, it feels like it's overwhelming and taking over.
That's pretty deep. That is pretty deep for someone your age to be thinking about. Like you must have been reading some crazy either sci-fi book or just some crazy journalism that you're like, this is going to percolate. It's going to turn into a song. And here's the song. Tell me a little bit about the inspiration behind that concept.
Yeah, I think I was like at a point where like it's funny. My husband has this saying that he's picked up from other people where it's like, ask a teenager while they know everything.
That's so good. Give him a high five for me. Just I love that. That's so good.
So it's this thing where it's like, you know, like late teens, fresh out of college, kind of like early 20s or whatever, where you're like, oh, the world is so despairing. I have to have some like philosophizing on this. And, you know, and so as it very much came out of that place where there's like a lot of frustrating things. And I think being in a place where you have an awareness of things like where you have trust in people or you've trusted an institution or trust in like some sort of structure, and then you see certain people who have like greatly disappointed on their you know, whether it's like something that they've officially promised or it's just like something that you would assumed, but about kind of having like coming with a fresh mindset to that and saying, you know, like all the dust will clear, you know, the mist in the air will dissipate, even though it's like a blip where people have really gotten off track.
I love that. And you know what? Just to debate on that a little bit, like,
yeah.
Do you feel like, because I feel like this, as you get older, you've kind of feel this, you have less hubris and you kind of lose a little bit of hope in what the world presents itself with. And you kind of gain a little bit more insight and humility, I guess, is the best way to kind of describe that. And do you think that as you get older, there's a bonus with getting that kind of insight versus, you know, there's a fire that I had in my 20s, just to like conquer the world, just that, you know? And it's like, John Mayer has a great lyric. He's like, my dreams are a little bit shorter now as he gets older. And I'm like, oh, I love that, just because the concept is so real. It's like, as so you get older, it's so like, do you think, how do you kind of like manage that? Like, you are definitely a more mature songwriter than anybody your age. I can tell you that right now.
Oh, wow. And thank you.
You have like this optimism, but this reality check too, that you kind of put in your lyrics. Tell me a little bit about how you kind of come to that, or how you balance what we were just talking about a second ago with getting old.
Oof. I feel like there's
hard questions. We don't usually have, but you know what? Yeah. You're the right person.
So good. Such good questions. I mean, I think the reality is it's that you can, what is it? It's like you can see, you can continue to like wish for things to be what they're not, or you can accept things that they are. Like, there's this concept called like radical acceptance that I think is used in psychology, where it's a different thing from, you know, like being okay with something, but to like get to a place where you're okay, like accepting people where they are, even if it's disappointing, or accepting things the way they are, even if it's not like delivering all of your hopes and dreams. Like, I think like as a kid in high school, and I like got it in my head, I'm like, you know what? Like, I 100% know I want to do music with my life, and I'm going to find a way, and I'm going to bolster up all of these other things, and like, it's going to happen. And I think there's this idea that like, because some of it's like not seeing the nitty gritty of everything going on, that you're just like, yeah, if I just work super hard, I can outwork everything. And then reality hits. And I think it's a lot more complex than that. But there's like, I feel like you have to have an appreciation for the difficulty there. Like, if somebody is a park ranger, they can be like, I love bears, I love nature, I love outdoors. But like, after working in like a national park for a few years, they have to have like a respect for nature that's there, a respect for the dangers, a respect for, you know, like the day-to-day difficulties. But it's like, do they appreciate the national park less? Do they appreciate nature less? And I think you have to kind of look at it like that.
That's a great analogy, because it's like, you, every I've never met a bummed out park ranger, but you know, there's got to be a part of them going home at some point, like, damn, tourists, like,
yeah,
there has to be some dark side to them, because every single park ranger I've ever met has been like joyous and joyful and just, you know. But you're right, it's like, after being there for maybe 8 years, does that wear on them, and does that human side start kind of showing through, and it becomes less glamorous? Or does, you know, does the nature part of it kind of have this reverence? Because my love for music has never changed, but the idea of like writing, I mean, some of the songs I've wrote in my 20s are like so optimistic. And like now, I just wrote a song for my latest record. It's like, someone tell the world it's burning. And it's like all about like global warming and like human rights. And I'm like, this is not the song I would have written in my 20s. You know, it would have been
a
party song, or let's have fun and, you know, rock the world tonight. You know what I mean? So like, you know, it's funny that you're thinking on that level, you know, when you're really young to be thinking about all these things. I feel like I'm 10 years behind you, you know. That's like, I love it though. So tell me, like, are you reading things that, or are you like, listening to the news? Are you like, where's your source for this realism and philosophy?
Yeah, I feel like I spend like a lot of like, I think I, in my childhood, like, my parents divorced really early. And so I think there was, like, this deep sense of reality check and, like, growing up fast and, like, where it's like the world is not a shiny place where everything right. is great all the time. And so I think, and but at the same time, when things would go really bad, there's this, I think there's like an aspect of it where it's like you can, that it was something my grandfather used to say, well, you can get bitter or you can get better. And so
I love that.
You just like kind of have to like live by that. And I think there's like, there can be a lot of terrible things that happen. But and like I got like a really serious illness that I'm still getting over that I've had for like 5 years. That was not at all in the plans of like, I was like, yeah, you know, I used to gig like 3 times a week back in Michigan and do shows with all kinds of bands in Chicago and just like push myself super hard. And I'm like, I can push myself harder. I can sleep less. I can work more. And that's kind of the mindset I came to LA with. And then you get like a really debilitating illness and you say like, does that change how I'm going to do something when it's like, you can't, you're not going to get, you know, second chances. And people say like, you're not getting any younger, and it's true, but at the same time, you can't, there's certain things you just don't have control over.
Yeah. And health is the great equalizer. So it's like, that's something that gives you a real quick reality check, you know, yeah. and approach, your approach will change. I mean, I'm the same way now. It's like, I don't want to gig 6 nights a week or 5 nights a week. Or even rehearse 3 times a week. It's like, it takes a lot out of you. And it's like, yeah. you kind of have to have this balance of like enjoying life and yeah. being able to write about life. It partly is just enjoying it or seeing what life can bring you in those treasure troves that will turn into songs, you know?
Yeah.
Well,
so I think that's like the life experience side. And then from like, you were asking about like what I was like reading or like that kind yeah. of stuff. Yeah, and like in high school, I'd say I was like really into sci-fi, of course.
Of course,
but you know, not writing.
Yeah,
yeah,
that's awesome though. It's like you know what's cool about sci-fi, just like I love like, for me, it's like I like books that can shape philosophy just in any way, because it makes the person more interesting when they can bounce back or tap into something that gives soul or insight or knowledge, or just like having, you know, a crazy amount of insight from a certain topic. I just find it fascinating when people go down that rabbit hole and then it becomes like, this is something that they enjoy and that shapes their philosophy. So mm-hmm. it's awesome that you found that so young and you yeah. continue to find that. Now you're about to release a new song. Tell me about how all these philosophies stewed together to come up with this new song, and what was kind of like your philosophy and direction with this new track?
So this song is actually like a little bit of a different song. So like the other ones, like I started with, and Bold was 100%er. And then the next, and then In the Air, what like I worked on with another person, and then but I started with most of it. And this, my friend Gretchen, who's also an amazing songwriter and has been in a ton of bands, toured for a bunch of years, was like super accomplished on the indie scene for, you know, 90s 2000s 2010s, and she's been like another like friend of a friend of my mom's, is like connected me to when I was in LA. I'd never met her husband, and they're both musicians, but we kind of connected and we've been friends ever since. I first moved out to LA. And so we collaborated on this song, and she has been doing a lot for just like writing in all kinds of different styles. And she currently releases with like 3 different bands as a writer and singer and instrumentalist. And then she'd kind of like departed and wanted to do something that was, you know, had been working in some stuff like for film and TV and stuff, that like was looking to do something that's like a little bit more in like dark pop, moody pop. And so she came with this idea, and then I finished the song with her, and then Evan and I, my husband, we produced it. And awesome. So it's been a really fun song, and it's a little more lighthearted than the other ones, but it's still about having, you know, like a take no prisoners attitude and approach to life.
Do you and Evan, when you're working on songs and production together, you like, do you ever have like a little like a little spat over like a hi-hat or something? You're like, hey, I really want the hi-hat there. Nah, that would, and then it just turns into something, or do you just see the same vision and you just kind of work together perfectly like you do in a relationship?
I would say like we don't really fight much ever, like if at all.
He's a pretty nice guy. You can't fight with Evan about too much.
We just aren't really like fighting people, but I would say when it comes to music stuff, we both can be kind of opinionated. So I think, however, like
I ask, right.
Yes. It's, I feel like opinions about things are maybe some of the most strong around music. And so we'll usually, I think we both have gotten to the point where we're comfortable letting each other test our ideas. And then we can kind of make a decision from what we're hearing. And that way it's like a little bit less biased than like, this is my idea, darn it. And I know best, you know? Well, so I think it's always
hard to balance that with anybody. And I can't imagine trying to balance that with somebody you're married with, you know, it's like,
yeah,
that's a tug of war. You got to tread lightly around that one because it's like, yeah, someone's making dinner for somebody at some point, you know, or like somebody's pulling some favor at some point. So it's like, yeah, which is the battle that I'm willing to fight and die for? Which hi-hat on this song am I willing to fight for versus, yeah, what arrangement? Or do you kind of just kind of, you both see like, okay, I want to come from this influence and put, mm-hmm, these sounds and production ideas there?
I think it... Well, I'll like frame it this way. It used to be a lot harder to work together. Mm-hmm. I think it was like almost impossible, even though we loved working on the same stuff. We bonded over so much commonalities and taste of music. Right. And so I think we already had that going. But in the beginning, it's so hard because you're like, oh man, I don't want to hurt their feelings, but I really have this strong opinion, or they have this strong opinion, they're communicating this way, and I don't know what to do because I don't agree. So I think over time, we've just become more comfortable working around each other. So I think it's like we've gotten to a place where we just have this kind of sense that it's better to kind of like in a positive way to kind of make our opinions known. Because if you stay silent, then that's almost worse.
Right.
Because then it's like, I could have told you this wasn't going to work 10 hours ago. Have fun recutting vocals.
You know what, though? There's always this balance. I find that when you're working with somebody, there's this fine balance of, is this worth voicing or is this going to be a time bomb that's going to go off? You know what I mean? So
yeah,
I think you figure that out. What's the name of this new track? It's a debut, right? It's your new single.
Yeah, it just came out today.
Oh, amazing. Perfect timing. I love this.
Perfect timing. It's called On Fire.
On Fire. Well, Christina, you're on fire. Here's Christina Morris with On Fire.
Shot to all of wonder.
That's on fire, and it's fire. You know what's so cool? It sounds like something that should be in the new Stranger Things series, because it's just feels like there's a chase scene or there's some kind of like adrenaline rush. It's got so much like fire in the track. Tell me a little bit about this concept and what made you write it in this way.
Thanks. I mean, I feel like I've never been a good person at taking compliments, and you're just like throwing them out and like, well, amazing.
No, I did a concert for Santana a long time ago, and he was getting honored for like a humanitarian award. And he said the funniest and coolest thing. He said, the hardest thing in life for most people is to accept a compliment. And I was like, oh, that's so interesting, because we're so willing to just like not accept it. Mm-hmm. So it makes it hard just to accept it. But you know what? Accept it, because you're awesome and you deserve it. So there's that. Thank you. So you're not alone. You're not alone.
That's very encouraging and very deep. But I feel like it's so true, because I think it's everybody's ready to like expectant of criticism, and you're like, yeah, I can do this better, especially when you're like self-critical naturally, and you're like, I should have done this, I should improve, because I think that's like what drives us to improve, but it's also not what helps us like be healthy humans.
Yes.
And so, but yeah, so this song, it really, I mean, I think we so wanted to capture a feeling of like, I think like I've loved TV and loved like super like interesting intricate storylines. There's so many like gritty shows that are out there that have like just this feeling that's so cool, and it feels so immersive again, and like has these cool elements. And we were brainstorming and talking about like some of the types of tracks that end up in like CW shows or things like Stranger Things, where it's just like really vibey, really fun, and has so much of a like direction to it that you can latch on, and you can, you know, just kind of like, I suppose this is like my approach to like a party song.
Well, but I mean, it's cool. It's got like throwback, like Kate Bush vibes. And it's also got like, you know, contemporary, you know, vibes too. And it's happening. It's like, it's a catchy song. It's like, you can't deny it, because it's still ringing in my head that it's catchy, you know? And I think that's 90% of it. So job well done. And where can people find it? And where can people find you online?
So you can find the song on, I think, any of the streaming platforms. So like Spotify, Tidal, iTunes, Apple Music, all that kind of stuff. And they can find it under Christina Johnson Morse. And Christina's with the K, and Johnson's with an EN. And then Morse is like the code.
I think you should just spell it all out just in case. I know people will see it, but just spell it out for the audio listeners.
So Christina is K-R-I-S-T-I-N-A. Johnson is J-O-H-N-S-E-N, and Morse is M-O-R-S-E. Like the code.
That's awesome. You've been a wonderful artist. Thanks for being on Wake Up Hollywood again. One of the reasons I started this show is for artists like yourself, because you were on in the very beginning on the studio. You've just keep on evolving to be just such a badass songwriter and artist. And we want to see what you're doing in 10 months, 11 months, whatever it is, when you have your next release. And just keep writing and keep, you know, spreading the love with what you do, okay?
Yeah, thank you so much again for having me on. This is just a blast.
Of course, your song is fire, and I wish you nothing but the best. And we'll have you on another Songwriters in the Round soon. Mm-hmm. So thank you for being a part of the first one that we did at Hotel Cafe in October. It was awesome to have you. But we will have you on Wake Up Hollywood again, and please give Evan a high five and a hug from me, okay?
I will. So good to see you.
Likewise, on behalf of Sam, myself, and Christina, we'll see you guys here next week. Peace and love.
Bye.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Corulla and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.